prison cannot keep people safe, so people need to be released so that they can safely isolate and quarantine and flatten the curve of this virus.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us. We'll continue to be on the story. James King, state campaigner for the Oakland-based Ella Baker Center for Human Justice and a member of the Stop San Quentin Outbreak Coalition. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe, save lives, wear a mask.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook, where we've been wearing masks for a long time. It's 6 o'clock, and that means, since it's Tuesday, it's time for Off the Wall. Bring us up like this. Okay, so let's try it out. Try your mic.
Hello.
I'm picking something up. Okay. Say another word.
W.
All right. Well, it's not really a word, but yeah, a little low, but that's because you speak low.
Yeah, I can be more dynamic if you want.
You see, you blew me right out of the seat there. Okay, that's good. I'm sorry, folks. We have to do this. We're still picking up our ramshackle studio because it got even more ramshackle during the conference and then the blackout last week. No end of challenges, huh? and Kyle sets everything up, and what's the one thing he doesn't take care of? His own microphone.
I don't know where I put it. E.
But that just personifies you. Not that you need personification.
I was trying to clean up.
You're already a person, so you don't. What I'm trying to say is this: it typifies you. How about that? It typifies you that you take care of everything except for yourself. And you save that until last.
I like that.
And sometimes you don't take care of it at all.
That paints such a
You don't take care of yourself.
No, I'm not.
That veered into negative.
I'm
sorry. I just...
Is this an intervention? Wait. No, get away.
Give me a microphone. That's what happens.
No, I want my regular microphone. This isn't even right.
So, okay, this is what confuses me. You have a microphone, but it's not your regular microphone. You have two microphones.
Travel microphone. This is like...
Travel. Okay. That's what we used last week.
Yeah, the one in the glass case that we put on the mantle.
Oh, that one. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, last week, as you recall, we were in a car because we didn't have any power because of the damn storm. And we finally got power back a few days after that. But boy, that was a bit much. Don't you think? Literally a day after of the conference that we dealt with for 9 days. We had, I think, one day. We had Monday. And then Tuesday, all hell broke loose. And no power.
You couldn't ignore it. Yeah, no power.
No, could not ignore that at all. And I got to say, massive trees falling. They just got one cleared the other day. I think yesterday. In fact, I think roads are still closed. And some people still don't have power a week afterwards.
Devastating impact, that storm. So quickly, I don't even know really what the totality it was. I think everyone was caught off guard and needed help quickly.
Well, we didn't get help quickly, that's for sure.
No, we needed help quickly.
I learned something, though, because we went to the city. We went to Manhattan, New York City. Had not been there since April. And boy, that was kind of weird. It's like, you ever have one of those days where you stay up for a few days or a couple of days, and then you fall asleep, and you sleep for a long time. And you wake up in the middle of your sleep, you know, take care of various things. And it's sort of like you're in a daze. Maybe you're up for like 45 minutes or something like that. And it's just the world is kind of murky. That was what it was like, just sort of dropping in on New York City after not having been there for a while. I'm probably not going to be there again for a while. Everything is still there structure-wise, but some of our favorite places are gone, out of business. And people are... doing the best they can, mostly walking around with masks. There are some dumbasses, mostly south of Houston Street for some reason. I don't know why that is. And I invariably comment as we pass them in the streets not wearing masks. Oh, you found a cure.
You're not essential.
Boy. It annoys me because it's the idiots that are keeping us in this horrible state where we can't open things up. We can't be back to normal. If everybody was intelligent and basically listened to science and did the right thing, this would have been over by now, everywhere. But no, we can't be like that. So, yeah, we visited Manhattan and hung out there where they had power.
At your own risk.
Power at your own risk?
No, visit at your own risk.
Yes.
I was ad-libbing.
Okay, yes.
Sorry about the paper noise. I didn't mean to.
It's a newsroom on top of everything else.
No, I brought in a giant stack of papers. I was going to carefully move them around here.
Can I just say, before we get into the actual news that somebody broke, there's other less breaking news that may break in just a little while. But there is a tropical wave. A tropical wave. That's not just somebody sitting on a beach going, hi. No, it's located more than 900 miles southwest of the Cabo Verde Islands. We have to go to the Cabo Verde Islands, Kyle. We have to go there.
Okay. Sounds delightful.
We can definitely check those out. It's moving west.
How do you spell that?
Northwest at 15 miles per hour. Well, it's two words, so you have to spell twice. Cabo is C-A-B-O, okay? And then Verde is V-E-R-D-E.
Oh, that's like green.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like green. It's very green.
All right.
Now, since yesterday, the tropical wave has become better organized, kind of like us. It's likely to become... What's the next thing a tropical wave is likely to become, Kyle?
Storm?
Well, yeah, I mean, in a very general sense, I suppose.
A system?
That's good, too, but no, it's wrong. Try again.
Tropical flavor? No.
Tropical flavor? Have you ever heard a weatherman talk about a tropical flavor coming? No.
Oh, my God. A wave, a current? Current?
It's like you know what it is, and you're just thinking of every word.
Thunderstorm.
Except, yeah, thunderstorm. Beware of the tropical thunderstorm coming your way. No, that's not it. Tropical depression. That's what a tropical wave turns into, is a tropical depression. And then a tropical depression turns into a tropical storm.
Got it.
And then a tropical storm turns into a hurricane. And then a hurricane turns into a power outage. You got it?
All right.
All right, so the general track of the system as of now looks like it'll fall just north of the Leeward Islands. We have to go to the Leeward Islands,
wait,
Kyle.
You just said system. I said system.
I said Leeward Islands. I want to go to the Leeward Islands.
Well, I don't know much about them.
You want to know how to spell that? Okay, L-E-E-W-A-R-D.
I was going to say L-E-Y-L-E-L-E-W-A-R-D.
No, Leeward. Leeward Islands.
Uh-huh.
However, this could still change. Wait, I lost track of what I was saying.
No, don't.
Could still change? A general track of the system could still change. Yeah, mm-hmm. Everything is a system, Kyle. Everything is a system. So it's not, there's no such thing as a tropical system because it already is a system. The system is out there. You can't fight the system.
It's upon us.
Anyway.
Yeah.
The good news, according to weather people who for some reason don't like weather, by the end of the week, this system should become weaker due to less conducive environmental conditions. That's always the reason. And it should break down. But if it does become a named storm, what do you think it'll be called, Kyle?
Kyle?
No, Josephine. You jumped the gun. Jumped the gun. We're only up to J.
I thought we were that close. I thought it was getting closer.
If you're lucky, Tropical Depression Kyle will be, will be next
JK.
Week.
JK.
Yes. next week, Tropical Depression Kyle will be a special guest on this show. Oh, now I'm hoping for Hurricane Kyle. I really am. I hope,
ready for the tough questions.
I hope you pack a mean wallop. Mm-hmm. I really do. I hope you knock down trees and cut off power and make little children cry.
Big time.
Because that's what you do in real life. Cut down trees and knock out power and make kids cry.
Well, not all at once, hopefully. It's just successively, I guess. But you know what made people cry is not having power. Not having it for a long time.
Yes. I don't blame the power company.
Yeah, I think it's been harsh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What's your take?
Well, I mean, I blame their communication systems. They're doing a great job out there. I mean, did you see the size of some of those trees that fell? I don't get why some storms make huge trees fall and other storms, which seem to have winds just as high, it doesn't happen. But then this one really did it. Wasn't hurricane strength. We've had hurricane strength winds. It's a higher amount of wind and the trees don't fall. But this was a tropical storm and so many trees fell and they were big trees too, really big. They would have crushed your car like one of those Pepsi cans that they have.
Well, and that's just it. They were doing that. There's just no other storm that we've had recently where it just casually disables like a mail truck or is basically has a lancing blow across the bow of a neighbor's boat or. Oh, that was a previous storm.
That was last week. We talked about the mail truck. Was in East Setauke. We passed it, and we took a picture of it. I even tweeted that, saying, this is Trump's work.
Right. Okay. So,
and it wound up on the front page of the local paper, too. Not my picture, but someone else took the same picture, and we'll be talking to them about
that. That's what I was referencing, but even more we've seen. Yeah, it is your picture, isn't it?
I took it first.
Isn't it?
I can prove it because I took a picture of them taking the picture, so we saw them. So, yeah. Anyway, copyright aside. Lots and lots of trees down on top of postal vehicles. And speaking of which.
Oh, yeah. The Copyright Protection Act. We definitely need to talk about that.
Do we?
Of course.
Okay. The whole thing with the post office and how Trump is trying to destroy them. And he is literally trying to destroy them. I could not have predicted this. But do you realize every time you see a mail truck, every time you see a post office, every time you see a mailbox, you're going to be reminded of how Trump is destroying the country. You could not ask for a better political ad for Joe Biden than that. You know, every mailbox is a reminder. And it's not even an opinion. He's saying he wants to shut them down because he thinks they're not efficient.
And it's the one group that, you know, every American, if they don't see anyone else, they'll see their post carrier, you know, letter carrier in their neighborhood. They'll have to interact otherwise to collect mail or otherwise send things. And that's other than that, I mean, you can pretty much remain away from the regular community. And it's an integral part of people's days in some cases.
Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Wait, oh, that was a commercial. But that was basically what America was. So it was a commercial back in the 70s. You could add the post office to that. Just like the hardware store, you know, that was just, that's Americana for you. And you don't just destroy that. You know, you don't just go in and think you can break it up and make it better. It didn't work for the phone company. Well, the phone company was different. All right? The phone company was a for-profit business. This is something that is an essential service that everybody has and is basically something that's existed for a couple of centuries.
And certainly not coincidental, mm-hmm. the disruption to it. And there's, of course, always problems with different entities and large entities like this. And there's been a lot of competition to it in packages and so on and so forth. And, you know, granted, arguments to be made, but we shouldn't try to make something that we rely on and that's already in a difficult spot as far as speed because of air travel. There's not a lot of planes flying around right now, and the mail made good use of airplanes to get letters around the country quickly. And there's, you know, other factors as well, management-wise, that set the post office up to have difficulties, and especially when rural places, you name it. There's always arguments to be made, but it's something... especially in this moment, the timing, mm-hmm. it's craven well, to dismantle something and even denigrate it. We need it.
This guy that that Trump has put in power over the post office.
He's for privatizing, or he's worked in private logistics. I think XPO was the company he worked for.
Uh-huh.
Sorry, I hit the cable.
Oh, is that you? Okay, I thought
it's
it was
a bad
me.
Cable.
Well, the thing is, this guy has been basically eliminating overtime, meaning that if there's a pile of mail at the end of the day, it just doesn't go out. And we're starting to notice the delays already. Now, we know the reasoning behind this is that Trump is afraid of vote by mail. That's literally what it comes down to. And if the post office is crippled by then, people will have no faith in it, and vote by mail won't be a thing. In fact, maybe elections won't even be a thing. It's really crazy what we're going through right now, but that is the road we are heading down. And if it continues like this with the post office, we won't have one in a few months. And let me just say, first of all, the post office shouldn't have to be profitable because it's a public service. It's an essential public service. So is the communications, obviously. The phone company is a whole other kettle of fish that we can talk about back in the 1980s. But right now...
Well, we have been talking about all of it. And broadband itself. And as even private carriers, which are ubiquitous in the homogenous carrier, which is wireless today. So mm-hmm. there's huge conversations. We talk
about
it all the
time. It's a different conversation. But right now, we're talking about getting mail delivered to your door. That is... or wherever the box is that's near your door. That is essential. That is something that should not go away. And one of the reasons why the post office is not quote unquote profitable is because they are forced, and this goes even before Trump, they are forced to fund retirement funds, I think 75 years into the future. I don't know who else is required to do that, but it's crippling to have to do that, to have to cover that expense. Yet the post office is expected to do that. So they have a lot of disadvantages.
And overhead.
Yes. Definitely.
It's not a trivial system, and it's not a system that private enterprise, I think, could come in quickly and just supplement in a comprehensive way.
I don't want private industry doing this.
Certainly not.
I want the damn post office.
Absolutely not. You imagine price hikes? Ridiculous. I mean, you thought stamp prices were ridiculous. I mean, it is
it's crazy to imagine grafting a private lowest bidder to graft that onto a system that is, again, as we've stated, integral for Medicaid. Well, a lot of the issues that have been talking about, it's like that have been talked about are medications and other time critical things that have been coming up as delayed or, you know, something that would be very, very devastating to everyday life if you couldn't rely on it. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that we need to have known, and especially if it's going to be an avenue for voting.
Anyway, the tree fell on the mail truck in East Setauket. We took a picture of it, and it was pretty cool. But nobody was hurt, which is a good thing. And power came back on. Okay, but one thing I discovered on the PSEG system... This is how this all started.
Yeah, there's a lot of disruption to their systems.
Their system is terrible because, first of all, when you have remaining gasps of power on a UPS and you're trying to go to their website to report an outage, the website is unreachable, ostensibly because they had a power outage or something, or they're just overloaded. They blame Verizon. I don't know. I don't care whose fault it is. You need to be able to report something like this. And you try calling them. It's just constantly busy, or you're just not able to get through. What I discovered, though, because we were still in the city, we didn't know if we had power. Some people around us had power, but we didn't know if we had power. And there was no way to really check, you know, there wasn't a way to call and see if something answered. Because we don't have answering machines anymore, you know? Back in the day, if you had an answering machine and it picked up, you knew you had power. There's no way to really know. So why drive all the way back if you don't have power?
We don't have anything for that yet.
No. So we do have to figure that out so that we don't...
Well, I've got some ideas.
Well, anyway, so I'm trying to check on their map. And their map shows the various outages. It's a very confusing map. It has numbers and arrows and colors. And what do I see? I see... a little designation right where we are saying, we'll get to you in about 4 days or something horrible like that. And I just couldn't believe it because neighbors had power. Why would we not have power? It doesn't make any sense. So I figured, you know, somebody at the electric company must be able to tell, is our electric meter on? Can you reach it? So I found a number where I actually got a person in less than a minute. And I'm always very nice to people on the phone, even if the situation is terrible, because it's not their fault. And I think she was just happy to speak to a friendly voice rather than an angry voice. So I said, please, could you just, here's all my info. Can you just see if our electric meter is reachable? And if it is, that would mean we have power. And she went away for a couple of minutes and she came back and said, yes, you got power as of a couple of hours ago. I was so happy, but that was the only way I could find that out. And I discovered afterwards that little indicator that said there was a power outage, that only showed up because I called in to get an update. And when I got an update, I reset my outage. Even though I wasn't reporting an outage, I was simply saying, what is the status of my outage? Meaning that I had an outage, but I didn't know if I had an outage because I couldn't see. So it registered that I had an outage and said, okay, well, we're going to have to wait 4 days to get to you. And that was really confusing and annoying. And when we checked the next day, that was still there. They still thought we had an outage, even though, you know, we didn't have an outage. I think a lot of people were probably going through that. That's a bad communication system.
Yeah, and the overwhelmed workers trying to put the system back together, talking to overwhelmed operators, compounded with a lot of pressure publicly from leadership and really bad coverage by the media. The media, local media, wasn't really getting a good answer, and I think they themselves were hampered. If you imagine a lot of reporters working remotely or whatever the situation may be, they perhaps themselves were out of power and chasing leads wasn't exactly a priority in the immediate aftermath of it. But it was incredible to see the damage and amount of wood that was that caused damage and ended up becoming debris.
You know what I noticed? The day after the storm, there were birds everywhere, birds flying left and right. And I think what that was, it was basically remodeling day because their homes got torn asunder.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many birds flying around. They were all kind of just ignoring each other and dealing with their own issues.
I think they have to reorganize and everything. And I think that's a good thing to be
learned and gleaned from nature. And I think they're still doing curbside pickup. If you bring branches out to the street, they may pick it up.
Well, they said Monday they were doing that. I don't know if Monday? They're going to do it again.
Is it over? Well, they may still take it.
If Tropical Depression Kyle comes, maybe there'll be another day where they pick up branches.
Oh, yeah.
But
well,
depends
on how depressed.
You brought up the N-word and nature, that is, that N-word. That's going to set me off because...
I'm sorry. I know what you're going to bring up.
You know what I'm going to bring up. You know, I mean, I'm better now than I was yesterday.
I'd never seen you like that, actually. I was a little... I didn't call anyone, but I was concerned.
There's no one you could have called.
I didn't feel in danger. Well, and it, after a while, I didn't. Why are you looking at me that way?
Because I'm reliving it. Look, we talked about this. We talked about the sunchokes that we planted. We talked about the groundhog incident. We've gotten past that. We had a deer fence up around the sunchokes, which are amazing plants. They grow high. They bloom.
We've moved from triage to rehabilitation.
And so basically we discovered that groundhogs chew through deer fences. So we got a groundhog fence or whatever that fence is
called. Specially designed, yes.
It's not a groundhog fence. It's just, what is
chicken
it?
Wire. Chicken wire. Turkey wire, actually.
Turkey wire. But can't they just fly? Okay, never mind. So we put that around the deer fence. That way we're protected against both groundhogs and deer. That was our main patch. Now, most of those sunchokes were I don't want to say destroyed, but severely injured. They're growing back, but it's spindly. They're not like they were, you know, and I'm just very upset by that. But we had other sunchokes in other areas that were surrounded and were not visited by the groundhog, and I was very happy about those. We were starting to see buds because August is when they bloom. And then on, I think it was Sunday evening was when we were able to trace this. Sunday evening, this damn deer just walked by. And despite the fact that there was a deer fence, stuck her head over the fence and just destroyed the top of one of our prize plants. And yeah, we have video of it, and it's heart-wrenching to see. It's very difficult.
It's graphic.
It really is. You just see the plant being completely destroyed. And it took something like 10 seconds. That was it. There was no way anything could have been done.
Each munch was like a split second.
It was horrible. It was just terrible. And I don't know what the solution is. I mean, why is nature attacking nature? For God's sake, we're trying to do something good here. And, you know, we're the humans, we're the ones pouring concrete over everything, and it's the animals that are destroying the things that we're trying to do to make nature better, and boy, it makes me really frustrated.
There's a lot against trying to do that good, even nature, because of other stressors in the habitat.
You think putting up a deer fence will keep the deer out?
It needed...
It doesn't keep the damn deer out.
I will admit, I was actually on the crew that did that in that particular location, and a couple people took some breaks, and I don't know.
What are you saying?
It wasn't as thoroughly reinforced as it probably should have been. I'm not...
Reinforced? She stuck her head over it. Maybe it needed to be higher.
Yeah, I think the stakes weren't high enough.
Oh, no, the stakes were pretty high. Anyway, I've never been so depressed over losing a plant. I mean, we didn't really lose a plant. We lost the top of it, but that was the best part.
They'll come back.
When will they come back, Kyle? When?
Eventually.
Yeah, I'm tired of waiting for things. I want things now. This has been a terrible year, and that plant was the one thing I had to look forward to. And in 10 seconds, this damn deer comes and eats it. I just hope it was worthwhile. I really do. So that's been my week so far. It's only Tuesday.
It's indicative of the times, the stresses. Stress, plants can handle it, though, and I think we are up to the fight. And
I didn't think it would be a fight, though. I thought I'd just plant something, and it'd be nice.
You're right. No, it's always a real
How do farmers do
it's
it?
It's an upset. Yeah,
how do farmers do this?
I don't know. I guess they just grow a lot of stuff. But if you lose a whole acre or a bunch of, I don't know. It's growing things is it's not for the faint of heart. You
well,
know?
I mean, the sun
gardening
chokes,
is hard. It's,
the sun
it's
chokes. The crop is below. You dig those up after the summer.
It's a root.
Hopefully, they don't discover that. And then next year they'll start growing back even more. But I don't want to wait until next year. I wanted that this year.
Have heart. We'll come around with stronger sunchokes. I'm trying to be positive. I just thought that
I get kind of a nod of approval from nature, you know, from animals saying I'm doing a good thing here. Rather than, oh, look what Emmanuel planted. Let's destroy it. Let's get together, the groundhogs and the deer. And what if something flies? I mean, how do you protect against a flying creature? Do we have to put a roof over this thing now? I mean, since when do you have to barricade everything that you grow? I think nature's just out of control.
What are you suggesting?
I'm saying nature used to be better. All right, nature used to be better behaved.
Friendlier? Okay.
Yeah, and we need to... Oh no! I'm not going to
re-educate the deer.
I'm not going to say make nature great again, but I'm just saying.
Wow! This is going to such a dark place. There are so many other.
The mood has changed. The mood has changed in nature. Is all I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Well, are there any other updates on that? I took notes. I'll talk to the team, and we'll see what we can do about that.
All right. Well, anyway, that's what's been going on. But you may have heard of some other news. The news was supposed to break during our show, but somebody leaked it early. And that news, of course, was that Kamala Harris is Joe Biden's pick for vice president. What do you think, Kyle? What do you think of that?
I'm thrilled. That was someone I had thought about early on, even in the presidential bids, a Democratic primary candidate. And, she even attacked Biden in one of the debates.
Early on. It was like one of the first things.
Yep. And this is kind of them, I guess, having some kind of resolution or reconciliation, so to speak. And that's a good narrative alone.
Do you remember when Obama was elected, one of the first things he did was make Clinton Secretary of State?
Yep.
Despite all their history.
Because she was qualified, capable, motivated, energized, diplomatic.
I want to say this. Secretary of State Warren.
Easily.
Yeah. Elizabeth
sure.
Warren should be great on...
From the three-point line.
I would have loved her to be vice president, but I would love for her to be Secretary of State.
Swish.
Yeah, that would be incredible. But, you know, this is politics now. It's going to get really, really interesting. I think Harris is going to be an incredibly strong candidate. I can hardly wait for the debate with Pence. There's always a vice presidential debate.
Mm.
She's going to mop the floor with him. That is, if he's even able to be in the same room as her without violating some of his religious things. It's a concern.
Right. The cult. Did they let him out for that? I think perhaps, or his hologram. Is his hologram allowed to log in?
I don't know.
We'll see.
So, politics is a gentleman's game. And despite the fact that you're on opposing sides, you treat each other with some decorum and politeness. And when a candidate is announced, you say something, I guess, respectful, kind of like an opponent in a football match would say of the other team. They'd say something respectful.
Oh right, yeah, sort of gracious, kind of welcoming the. The challenge, bringing them into the fore of the campaign itself, the juggernaut that is American politics.
So here's what Trump advisor Katrina Pearson said today.
She sounds sweet.
Kamala Harris will abandon her own morals as well as try to bury her record as a prosecutor in order to appease the anti-police extremists controlling the Democrat Party. Yes, is that Democrat Party thing again. She goes on to say, Harris has gleefully embraced the left's radical manifesto, calling for trillions of dollars in new taxes and backing Bernie Sanders' government takeover of health care. She calls Harris proof that Joe Biden is an empty shell being filled with the extreme agenda of the radicals on the left. Isn't that nice?
saccharine sweet, just laced with compliments.
That you can put politics aside to basically issue a genuine, heartfelt congratulations, I guess is the appropriate word. She finished by saying, at the ballot box, Americans will resoundingly reject the abysmal failures of Biden-Harris. How have they had any failures? They haven't done anything together yet. How can they even say that? In favor of the America First strength of President Donald Trump and Vice President Mike Pence. All right, well, we'll see where that goes. But I think despite what you may think of Kamala Harris, and she was a prosecutor, so people definitely have issues with some of the things that she may have decided or some of the positions she may have taken. I think today is one of those historical occasions, almost parallel to the night Obama was elected. I think people are celebrating to that degree because here we are for the first time, an African-American woman being nominated for vice presidential candidate of a major party. That has never happened before. And that, and she's also Asian American too. I don't know if people are aware of that. India and Jamaica, I believe, are where her parents are from. It's an historical moment. It really is. And she is a strong candidate. She speaks her mind. She doesn't take any crap. And that's exactly what the other side is dishing out.
Knows the issues, knows law, has a sense of humor, is coherent. We've been missing that for a while. Should I go on? Should I keep going?
If you want, yeah, sure, go ahead.
has ideas for the future, is open to being wrong, to making changes, to criticism, to a future where we all can partake in leadership, who will open the door, who will open the floodgates of opportunities for people, to open the eyes of opponents to the type of leaders we can see in the future. I mean,
wow. Yeah, no, you've got a lot.
I'm sorry. I'm breaking. I gotta get something. I'm sweating.
No, sit
here.
Sit back down.
It's
sit back down.
It's a lot of work.
We have months to list all these things. But the most important thing, the thing you left out, is that she is not Trump. She is not Pence.
Freaking Louia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
I just had it cleaned. Does it look good?
It's a visit from an old friend.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't know that it was actually this shade of like a burgundy red, all that dust on the mechanism, but we cleaned it. It's looking good, and the bulb actually didn't need to be changed.
That's true. That's true. You're talking about the film projector that we used to see our Academy Award-winning films, and we finally got around to seeing one again after all the hubbub had died down a little bit. And it's time for another edition of Films of the Year That Was, as we journey back to 1976. Now, we already saw the American film that won the Academy Award for some reason. That was Rocky. I guess I just left a bad taste. We had to take a break. But now we go to the international or foreign language film that won that title. I don't know why they always have to be different, why a foreign language film can't win, but they did actually this past year in 2020, but it took that long. So anyway, this film was actually the only film ever to win from the Ivory Coast, and it's about events of World War One, the very beginnings of World War One in Africa, in a place called Cameroon. It was spelled differently than today's Cameroon because it was a colony of the French, and the Germans had an outpost down the road. And basically, the story, the rather bizarre story, it's kind of based on reality too, because similar things happen. These colonists discovered through a care package that came in the mail that they were at war with Germany. World War One had broken out. And so they have to figure out how do we deal with the Germans down the road? We must be at war with them, so therefore we have to conquer them. And
it involved all kinds of planning and things that they weren't really prepared for. They were actually just kind of idle prior to that.
Yeah.
Just maintaining things sort of at their base.
Did we say the name of the film? Black and White in Color. I don't know if I said the name
of
the film.
Noir et Blanc en Color.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, it was made in the Ivory Coast, French director, and really interesting kind of comical story, but also...
Very funny, actually.
Yeah. Very funny, but so racist. But the thing is,
racist.
The director was pointing that out. He was trying to point out how stupid the colonists were. Basically, the Africans who were doing all their bidding and even being soldiers for them, because you think they went and fought themselves. No, they didn't. They basically are making fun of the white people constantly, and the white people don't even know. They admire certain songs, and the songs are all about how the white people who they're carrying in chariots, how their feet smell, and all kinds of other things like that.
Typical ignorance, though, that you know went on in all of these sort of scenarios.
And still to this day.
Still does. Uh-huh. When we're traveling, we notice and take great interest in language, because... If you don't know a language, you might be being made fun of in front of your face. And this was so wonderfully depicted. I believe they were being carried by these chairs where they'd have like six people carrying you through the bush. And the song was being sung about them and while then, you're humming along, being made fun of in this tune.
In the invasion of the Germans down the road, all the white people basically had a picnic and just listened to... All the African soldiers that they had recruited fighting ostensibly with the other African soldiers that the Germans had recruited and being slaughtered and realizing, oh, maybe this isn't turning out so well. We'll have to cancel our picnic and start heading back. it's horrible, but it's reality. That is what happened. It's bizarre and weird to focus on this particular point in history that I never even knew about before. Who thinks that World War I is being fought in remote parts of Africa simply because somebody reads a newspaper that's 6 months old and realizes, hey, we're at war with the people down the road? This is a hard film to find, too. It's not easy. It's not out there. It took a couple of weeks, actually, to get a hold of a copy. It's even harder to get the next one, too, the next foreign film, but I'm working on that right now. But what do you think overall?
Well, I really enjoyed seeing something shot on location and a lot of the improvised techniques and shooting. I don't know. There was a lot of hilarity to it. The humor was the best part.
Uh-huh.
But I thought it was cool. The intro was really beautiful as well as a montage. And I like these kinds of sequences because it's a way of setting a scene without establishing shots or like a lot of landscapes, but rather paintings and sort of memorabilia, keepsakes. And it sort of went through bringing you around this story, which... And there were a lot of colorized images that then, so black and white, but with tints. And then, of course, the film itself was in the color medium. So really interesting. And the first from the African continent.
Yes. So that was our film from 1976, Black and White in Color. And next stop, 1977. All right. Put the projector away for now.
Yes, yeah, I actually got a cover for her. Yeah, that's why that's over there. You got to slip it over.
All right, so what else has been going on? Well, of course, COVID-19 is raging. The Stony Brook is opening up again, and not everybody thinks that's a good idea because, well, for instance, the United University Professions has issued statements saying that not enough is being done. And I have to share their concerns. Governor Cuomo announced public sector employers will follow the same standards for reopening as private sector businesses. And as a result, every SUNY campus, of which Stony Brook is one, may begin to bring employees back to campus who have duties consistent with the permitted activities in each phase in the region where the campus is located. Actually, that's already happened. We're talking now about students coming back, I think, as early as next week. The thing to remember...
Well, moving in.
Yeah, moving in and going to class. But the thing to remember, and this was said by Southern New Hampshire University President Paul LeBlanc, if you were to design a place to make sure that everyone gets the virus, it would look like a nursing home or a campus. Yeah. And now we've witnessed what's happened in nursing homes all across the country. We need to ensure our campuses are not next. If these people are concerned, we all should be concerned. They had a virtual demonstration about a week ago, which I think 4,000 people attended virtually. These are issues that need to be discussed. And unfortunately, a lot of them aren't being discussed. Growing sense of urgency, UUP members have joined students, lawmakers, community advocates to demand that SUNY quickly and significantly upgrade its inadequate campus reopening plans. Lives could be at stake. That was what was said during the August 5th virtual rally. It basically was held via Zoom, Facebook Live. Marked the largest event in UUP's summer-long effort to have SUNY issue a system-wide set of standards that campuses must meet before students descend on college communities all over the state. Those standards include ongoing testing, contact tracing, social distancing, mandatory mask wearing in all settings, whether indoors or outside, wherever students congregate, and telecommuting for faculty and staff to reduce density on campus. The union and its advocates have grown increasingly concerned that money, not safety, is driving SUNY's decision-making. UUP members say they are worried that their campuses have adopted the simplest reopening plans possible to encourage students to return to college along with their tuition payments and their spending in campus communities. At the same time, faculty say they hear their administrations describe extensive testing for the coronavirus as too expensive. UUP counters that extensive testing will look like a bargain compared to the cost of once again closing SUNY campuses, as happened in March. It's terrifying to me, said Stefan Edel, the coalition coordinator at New York Renews, which is a group of climate advocates and labor groups. Terrifying to me to see this state playing chicken with the federal government over funding, referring to the fact that state lawmakers have repeatedly said they cannot provide additional funding for SUNY until they know how much additional federal funding the state may receive to fight the pandemic. And, of course, as we all know, that has stalled in the Senate. Now the clock is ticking. SUNY will reopen before any additional state or federal funding becomes available. We all need to continue to raise our voices, they're saying. Here in New York, the governor and the legislature can wait no longer. It's kind of scary. We're still doing our show remotely because we don't think it's safe to simply waltz around on campus, to be in buildings. Not yet.
Or just adding to that traffic.
We don't want to do that. We don't want to bring anything onto campus. Now, students coming back to dormitories will have to adhere to very strict guidelines, including wearing masks at all times. We don't see that around off campus. Not nearly as much as we're supposed to be seeing. Every day when we look around outside, we see people who are just simply ignoring these simple guidelines, thinking it won't affect them.
What are those students going to be protect? I mean, what are they going to be exposed to in the community once they're here?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, we expect students to follow these rules. Okay, but what are the plans if they don't? And how strongly are these guidelines going to be enforced? Because they do need to be enforced. I don't want to hear this garbage about how it's an infringement of your rights to be forced to wear a mask. It's a damn pandemic. You have to wear a mask in public, period. And if you think that's a violation of your rights, you know what? Go to one of those countries you're always telling us to go to when we don't like something. I don't know. It's just the stupidest argument ever. And the fact that we entertain it just makes it stronger, makes more people say. Right now, there's 250,000 bikers in, what is that, South Dakota, North Dakota?
I can't tell. Sturgis, South Dakota.
And they somehow think it's not going to affect them at all. They're just ignoring it. Dumbest idiots ever. And, you know, I don't like saying people deserve to get the virus because I don't think anybody deserves to get it. But what we certainly don't deserve is to be infected because of those idiots. And that is exactly what's going to happen. And I'm worried that if this isn't enforced strongly enough, we're just going to see a second wave as a result. And not only college campuses, but public schools as well. You know, kids are tremendous spreaders of the disease. They may not feel the effects themselves, although there are a number who do. But they certainly can spread it. And if you look back in history, look back in the flu pandemic of the 20th century, 1918 through 1920, you'll see it's this kind of ignorance that led to 50 to 100 million people eventually dying. So that's where we stand right now. And I just hope people use common sense.
Yeah, there's a lot you can do. You can talk to people about it, talk to your neighbors, talk to family members. Try to make sure people understand the imperative of taking care of themselves and being really cognizant of people around you that may be susceptible or that may be putting themselves or others at risk because of this, because that's a form of contact tracing, you know, being aware, knowing what your orbit is likely to be exposed to, and taking every bit of the precautions we took in the early spring the situation just as seriously.
Well, more, because we weren't wearing masks in early spring.
That's true. Because not as much.
We were told not to. We were, in fact, we even told people, don't wear masks. It's not effective.
We knew
And the fact that that has changed is being used as an argument that we're not being told the truth. No, what's happening is we're learning. We're learning that this actually does have an effect. We didn't think so before. Now we do. And if scientists can admit that they had it wrong and now they are going down a different path, have enough faith in science to believe them.
Right, right. And there's a lot of there was a lot of need early on also for that equipment, and any kind of covering or barrier was suitable then. Well, there's been time to stock up and to resupply and have as many of those improvised and other masks widely available and distributed. So everywhere you look, there's some kind of way you can cover up your mouth and nose so that you're as protected as possible. And you should take advantage of those things, distribute them to people who perhaps may not have the advantage. I've seen very, very old people in wheelchairs. I've seen little toddlers and infants. Well, I guess they're also wheelchairs, like strollers, but they all know how to put on masks.
Well, I don't know that infant is putting on his own mask, but I've seen toddlers do it without being told.
Yeah, young people, older people, and everyone in between gets how that works and knows that it's a simple thing to do. It doesn't take much at all.
You know, it just makes me wonder, why do these people wear pants? The people walking around, they're being forced to wear pants because that's what society says you have to do. Are they objecting to that? Or, you know, during the Blitz, okay, in World War II, you know, in England, where you had to basically cover your windows and keep your lights out. No, I want to keep my light on. How dare you tell me what to do? I'll do what I want. That is the kind of mentality, and the results will be pretty much the same if idiots run the roost. But here are some rather sobering numbers. Now, the Pan American Health Organization's top health official, probably somebody we ignore now, warned today that the region's expanding number of coronavirus cases show the Americas remain under the grip of COVID-19. Now, the United States surpassed 5 million cases of reported coronavirus cases on Sunday, the worst outbreak in the world, with roughly a quarter of the world's 20 million cases. And that's just insane. Brazil has the second most number of cases. Tweedledum, Tweedledummer. Yeah, you have one idiot leader and another idiot leader, and look who have the leading amount of cases. It's not hard to figure out. If you don't follow the science, you will pay the price. And so the Americas, we are now in the lead here. And I just want to share some numbers. I did a little bit of number crunching before. We just topped 5 million cases, and that's the number everybody's talking about. There are 328 million people in this country. 5 million people have the coronavirus or have been diagnosed with it. If you divide 5 into 328... you get 65.6. What does that number mean? It means that 1 in 65 people has been diagnosed with the coronavirus. That's what that means. If you look at the total number in the world, it's something like 20 million cases. The world population is 7.8 billion. You do the same mathematical calculation, and you'll find that 1 in 390 people worldwide has coronavirus. So worldwide, 1 in 390, United States, 1 in 65. What does that tell you? Okay, you don't believe in just the cases, because okay, we're testing more people. I've heard that argument. Because we're testing more people, the numbers are higher. Okay, fine. Let's talk about death. Because you can't really dispute those numbers. Death is death. All right? And the number of people who have died from the coronavirus in the United States, that's 163,000. 163,000 people have died. I still can't believe that. So you take that same 328 million, divide 163,000 into there, and you'll come up with the figure that 1 in 2012 people have died of the coronavirus in this country. 1 in 2012. I don't know if that seems like a high number to you or a low. It seems like a very low number to me. But if you do the same thing with the world, and you take the, at last count, 737,000 people who have died worldwide, and divide that into 7.8 billion, you'll get 10,583, meaning 1 in 10,583 people worldwide has died of the coronavirus. So, worldwide, 1 in over 10,000. United States, 1 in just over 2,000. Death rate. Argue that. You can't. We are in a bad state, a very, very bad state. We need to fix it. And we can. That's the beauty of it. We know that certain things work. Look at New York. Look at our numbers. Look at how amazing the numbers are in New York. Because for the most part, despite all the dumbasses out there, for the most part, we tackled this. If we tackled it better, it would be gone. And if we tackled it nationwide, Trump's job, it would be gone. So the fact that we have so many people dying, we're going to hit 200,000 people. You know the reason why that happened. You know who's at fault. And it's pathetic and sad.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think a lot of the political attempts by politicians, the statements about, sugarcoating, trying to overstate completion of recovery from lockdowns or recovery from deaths and illnesses and the wave, so to speak, that makes it a lot harder and actually, I think, promoted a certain cavalier attitude, especially during vacation periods and stuff. That's great to have optimism, but it's so harmful in a situation where you really, really need people to remain vigilant, no matter how good the outlook may look on paper. Because, and I think this isn't mentioned enough, there's a delay. There's a lag when you're taking polls, you're getting information together and so forth. So you need to be able to anticipate it more.
All right. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I could talk about this for a long, long time. But, hey, we'll get through this together. Maybe celebrate a little bit tonight, because maybe there's progress ahead. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Good night.
Now listen Bye. To my story. Bill collectors on me. Have to file bankruptcy. Need some help from somebody. Yonder bills are stacking up. I'm desperate to make a buck. I played the lottery today. Won't you please wish me luck? I'm gonna dance my pain away. I got problems. Dance my pain away. You think white he gonna stay? I just have to hope and pray. Rain, go away. The repo man just hit me. Can't get from A to B. Fake friends around me. Lord, won't you help me? Now I'm on my tippy toes. Face down, eyes closed. Dancing to this melody. So please, won't you sing a song? Dance my pain away. I got a problem. Dance my pain away. I got a problem.
that's my pain away.
I got a problem.
That's my pain away. Like, whoa.